Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations. The eternal life. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Life, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's story, Sentence of Life, was written by Morton Wishengrad. Featured as the man is Charles Penman, and the narrator is Norman Rose. Once upon a time, there lived a man who did not know he was mortal. He was not ignorant. He knew that men were born and that they die. He had known it even as a child when he sat at Bible lessons and heard other children recite,
For we must needs die, and there is water spilt on the ground which cannot be gathered up again.
He was never troubled by the words, nor was he troubled when he became a man. And he heard similar words from the pulpit.
The days of our years are 70, yet it is speedily gone, and we fly away.
He agreed with the words, insofar as they applied to others. Naturally, they did not apply to him. He was not mortal, nor was life brief. It was interminable.
A timepiece is a very foolish invention. It merely reminds people that there are 60 seconds in each minute, 60 minutes in each hour, 24 hours in each day. It's too much.
This man did not lack the common benefits of mortality. His mother died.
Every dark cloud has a silver lining. I'm happy to inform you that your dear mother has left you a legacy that comes to more than $10,000 a year.
When his father died, the family lawyer didn't have to bother to read the will.
Yes, father told me that everything would go to me. Excuse me. Just leave the bonds in the top drawer.
He built a new wing and added conservatories to his house. He married a pretty girl who believed every word he uttered. He joined an expensive golf club and took his handicap seriously. He begot two daughters and one son and cultivated begonias and the county families. And his bank manager respected his habit of planning for tomorrow instead of today. He found it something of a trial to buy simple things like clothes.
That's a fine piece of leather. Just take it in your hand, sir.
No, I'd like something better.
Why, then, this is what you want. The very latest fashion.
I'm not interested in the fashion. Fashions change.
I see. Oh, you want something that will last. I have just the thing for you. Just look at that shoe. There isn't a shoe to touch it.
Is this the best you have?
The very best. My dear sir, that shoe is good for 30 years.
Haven't you anything more durable?
The shopkeepers found him exasperating. But they contained themselves, for he was an important man and a successful one. As he grew older, he became more successful. His business thrived, his garden flourished, his possessions increased. But none of this made him happy. He was distressed by the manners of his children.
Out of my way, Dad! Can't you see I'm in a hurry?
Despite their expensive education, his daughters did not show him the deference that he considered suitable. He was distressed by politicians who did not carry out the policies he thought desirable, by servants whose efficiency seemed to decrease as their wages grew higher.
The soup is cold.
I'll tell the cook, sir.
You might try serving it a bit faster. I pay you good wages.
I do the best I can, sir.
Then perhaps that's not good enough. Take this back. I want a bowl of hot soup.
Yes, sir.
Well, don't stand there. Take it away.
Very good, sir.
But his lunch was hopelessly spoiled.
I detest soup that's cold and soup that's tepid. Soup should be served hot or not at all.
He was in bad humor, a condition which was not improved by the equally bad humor of his wife.
I'm sick and tired of having every meal degenerate into a scene between you and one of the servants.
How interesting.
And I'm tired of your sarcasm. It's very feeble.
Then why not relieve me of the necessity for sarcasm by running your household as it should be run?
What do you mean by that?
I mean that the servants are slipshod, the cook is an imposter, and you're incompetent.
How dare you?
Moreover, you haven't the vaguest idea of how to bring up children or take care of a husband.
How dare you?
That's twice. I'm still not impressed. Perhaps things would be better if you spent less time in front of your mirror and more time in front of...
You've been absolutely insufferable.
You're shouting.
God pity me, but I loved you once. If it weren't for my loyalty to the children, I swear I wouldn't abide this house for a minute.
Thank you, my dear. But why tell the servant?
Go away. Go back to your office. Why in heaven's name do you come here for lunch? It's bad enough to have you for the other meals. Please have the human decency to go to your office and let us alone.
But at the office, the poor clerks wished he were back at home.
Mr. Miller?
Yes, sir?
I should like to see you.
I'm coming, sir. What is it?
Don't you know?
No, sir.
Look at this balance sheet.
It seems perfectly all right to me, sir.
It's all wrong. Where's the item for depreciation?
I've put it right here, sir, under this item marked obsolescence.
And why did you do that?
I don't know, sir. Maybe it's because obsolescence is such a nice round word and depreciation seems rather down at the heels.
Mr. Miller, you are a baboon.
Yes, sir. Anything else, sir?
Yes. Tell the cretin who calls himself your assistant that he's discharged.
He wasn't deliberately late, sir. He was unavoidably detained.
Mr. Miller, if you have to make these excuses, make them elsewhere. Why in the name of everything wretched you incompetent bunglers insist on working for me?
Don't you know, sir?
No, tell me.
It's only because we need the money.
These little scenes were not pleasant to him. After they occurred, he was generally filled with a sense of remorse, and he tried to make atonement in small and devious ways.
What a pretty bunch of flowers.
Mm. I cut them myself.
Oh? Thank you.
When he handed out an especially large bonus to his employees, there were no shouts of joy. He heard them say to one another,
"He's still getting a bargain for what we have to take."
And the worst of it all was that he knew it was true, and found himself incapable of doing anything about it. Moreover, he found himself increasingly subject to a certain digestive uneasiness.
I beg your pardon.
If I were you, I wouldn't call attention to myself.
But can't I even get a civil word in my own house?
Oh, ironic.
What's ironic about a man that...
Why don't you try exercising in the morning? Try knee bending 150 times.
I suppose you think that's funny.
He didn't think so, but he tried knee bending. It didn't work. His bank manager had another suggestion.
Nothing better for the digestive apparatus than 9 holes of golf before breakfast.
He tried 9 holes. He tried 18 holes. His chauffeur advised a patent medicine. His barber recommended hot towels. But each thing he tried only aggravated his discomfort. The trouble was that he was not happy, that he was not interested. Time seemed to him very long and very tedious. Though he made money and bought anything which suited his fancy, he couldn't buy satisfaction. One day he forgot himself to such an extent that he said to the bank manager,
I don't know what the world is coming to. Sometimes I think I'd be better off dead.
As he said it, he realized that he was thinking of something that was impossible. However, the bank manager nodded his head sagely.
Why don't you see a doctor?
Absurd. I've no use for doctors. Never did.
Well, you know the joke everyone tells. It all depends on the liver.
I hate puns.
Naturally you would. I mean, most intelligent people do. But seriously, sir, why don't you pay a little visit to your family doctor?
It was really a rather stupid suggestion. A man like himself visiting a doctor. Absurd. Still, the family doctor was only a short distance away.
Say, ah.
Ah.
Breathe through your mouth. More rapidly. Don't tire yourself unnecessarily. You may stop.
Well, Doctor?
I don't know. I'd like you to see a specialist.
There. Ah.
Breathe through your mouth. More rapidly, if you please. You may stop. You may stop.
Well, Doctor?
My dear sir?
Tell me.
I'm not certain. I want you to see a radiologist.
Raise your hands.
Like this?
A little more, sir.
How's this?
It's better. Now, place your right hand behind your neck.
This way?
Mm-hmm. Good. Hold it, sir. Hold it.
Well, I'm certainly going to be anxious to hear your report.
Oh, my report won't be conclusive, sir. Not by a long shot. I want you to go to see a biochemist.
This won't hurt.
Oh!
It's only a little blood.
The biochemist sent him to an ophthalmologist, who sent him to an allergist, who sent him to a neurologist, who sent him to a surgeon. The surgeon sent his report back to the family doctor.
Sir, there's no use blinking the truth.
What did you say, Doctor?
You are the head of a family. You have responsibility.
What in the world are you driveling about?
My dear sir, I think you ought to know that all the reports are on my desk.
What about them?
We consider you to be in a very grave condition.
Nonsense. It's a mild digestive upset.
I wish it were true.
You mean you want to cut me up? I refuse to consider the idea.
I'm afraid that an operation would hardly be advisable under the circumstances.
Under what circumstances?
Your circumstances, sir. An operation at the very best might prolong life for a few weeks, but...
Prolong life? Do you mean that I'm going to die?
Sir, I'm only a doctor. These things are not in our hands.
Well, they well ought to be. What do you think I'm paying you for?
This is no time for such language. Not for you, old man.
Don't you dare call me old man. You're really serious, aren't you?
Don't take it badly. Death is a condition of life.
Fiddlesticks. Send your bill to my office. I'm bored. Goodbye.
He had lied to the doctor. He wasn't bored. He was very far from being bored.
I'm going to die.
It was such an incredible thought.
I'm going to die.
He looked down at his own familiar body and tried to imagine it enclosed in a coffin. He looked at the pleasant suburban road on which his house was situated, at the geraniums and lobelia bordering the garden beds, at the chestnut trees which had blossomed before his father's birth, at the cars passing, the boys on bicycles, and at the freshness and the gaiety of a summer day. A bird sat on a fence. He tried to imagine the bird sitting there, still sitting, when he was no longer there to see it.
I'm going to die.
He thought of his wife and tried to imagine her weeping over his grave. He tried to imagine his son running through the house in his newfound freedom. He tried to imagine Miller at the office.
He'll probably put his feet on the desk.
A neighbor passed.
Nice day, isn't it?
I wonder what you would say if you knew you were greeting a man under a sentence of death.
The drama of the situation exhilarated him.
I'm a doomed man.
He had been condemned.
By 7 doctors.
Today, tomorrow, the final dissolution might begin. He felt as though every other man must live forever. He alone was destined for imminent death. He opened his gate. And entered his garden. He saw the new apple trees impaled and spread against the sheltering wall.
I'm never going to see them blossom. No.
And into his mind, it flashed that the sight of apple blossoms was one of the most exquisite of human pleasures. His feet halted again.
I shall never see another spring.
It was a strange thought. He'd always taken it for granted that daffodils in his orchard and eggs in the thrush's nest and the showers scattering through the silver birches were little amenities provided by nature for his sole comfort.
And now they'll continue, even when I'm not here to enjoy them.
His daughters were slim and graceful in their gay summer dresses. They were his girls, his children. He had made them, educated them, clothed them. He had molded them to his taste. But he saw now that they had independent existences, which would continue long after he had ceased to fret over their manners or to take pleasure in their youthful grace. He entered the cool quietness of his house.
You're home early.
Yes. You've put roses in the silver bowl.
You've noticed.
Why do you say that? Have you always put roses in the silver bowl?
4 years.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. I'm rather glad. I'm pleased.
It was pleasant to him that his wife was pleased. He touched his fingers to the tablecloth.
A damask cloth.
He let his hand rest on a chair.
Solid mahogany.
He looked around. His eyes were new. His possessions were solid, invulnerable, constructed for endurance. Regarding them, he became conscious of his fragile body. constructed for decay. Everyone else in the house, the clock said, tick-tock, 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 tick-tock. But to him it said, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. Tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. Squandering its rare treasure of time, flinging to left and right the day, the minutes, the moments. Life was brief, 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 brief.
I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm going to die.
And he knew that life was sweet.
The soup is on. You like it hot?
Yes, of course.
And so he went to the head of the table and sat down. He tasted the soup.
Oh, it's good.
Thank you, sir. I'll tell cook.
Do that, will you? I'll be grateful.
Yes, sir. Is there anything else you would like, sir?
I've been cruel to you. I would like your forgiveness, sir.
No, sir. Not cruel.
I behaved monstrously to you.
They all regarded him with wonder. The servant was only able to nod his head, and he returned to the kitchen more rapidly than was necessary. The man smiled at his family.
The wine is good. Hold out your glasses. Girls, you look very handsome this evening. Almost as handsome as your mother.
That's kind of you, my dear.
It's good to be able to say it, and even better to mean it.
You make me blush.
He smiled at her and at them. His daughters were fair. His son was stalwart. His wife was graceful and dignified and a true lady.
I have thought of something. All tedious things become tolerable if we realize we may never have to suffer them again. And all things become truly precious when we are about to lose them.
They agreed with him without understanding what he meant. Each morning of each day, after that day, when he awoke, he said,
perhaps this is my last awakening.
He regarded his children more closely, and he saw in them new and interesting qualities of character. When he went to his business, he exerted all his powers.
Sir, I just wanted to say that everyone in the office is quite excited about the Mercer project. You've handled it brilliantly, sir.
It's good of you to say so, Miller.
Wonderful, sir. The men are stimulated. It's a challenge.
Miller, you make me proud.
Do I, sir?
Yes.
That's good, sir.
His bank manager studied him for a few moments. And then he said,
you know something, sir? You look younger.
You're joking.
No, you look younger. You've got bound.
The man laughed. He no longer complained that life was not worth living. He was in love with life. And he counted every hour a miracle snatched from the oblivion of death. He returned to his doctor for a routine examination on the progress of his disease.
Hold still a moment longer.
You're disturbed, doctor. What is it?
I'm not disturbed. Not at all, sir. I'm marveling.
What do you mean?
With the symptoms we found in you, 9 men out of 10 would now be on their deathbeds. Sir, I believe you're going to prove an exception. Don't you understand? I'm telling you that you've got a chance to live to a ripe old age.
I may live?
As long as I or anyone.
Thank you, Doctor.
Of course. We all have to die someday.
Yes. For we must needs die, and are as water spilt on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again.
He went out into the streets of the city. He knew now that though the sentence had been postponed, it had not been repealed. He was alive. But someday he must die. The sun still shone. His garden still was sweet. His daughters still were beautiful. His work still lured him by its promise of conflict and of triumph. But now he knew that existence has meaning, because existence has an end. He was glad to live because he understood now that all men must die. His heart and brain were full of this crowning mercy. Life, its rarity and its value. And thus dreaming, he never noticed the vehicle, which, swinging rapidly around the corner, killed him instantly. Perhaps of all who grieved, the most sorrowful was the doctor.
Madam, I can't tell you how I feel. I blame myself.
No, doctor. There's no one to blame.
No, I blame myself. Because our diagnosis was wrong. And by mistake, I passed a sentence of death upon him. A sentence of death which cast a shadow over all his final days.
The kind doctor was wrong. He did not know that it was the sentence of life which he had spoken.
A copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to The Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. Our Eternal Light drama today, Sentence of Life, was written by Morton Wishengrad and was adapted from the story of the same name by Winifred Holtby. The music was composed by Morris Mamorsky and conducted by Milton Caton. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured as the man was Charles Penman, and Norman Rose was the narrator. The entire production was under the direction of Frank Papp. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. The program came to you from Radio City, New York. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.